So anyway, and the phone...
It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Right. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery. New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93. That's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Nebach Winery.
We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Glacier Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Yes.
And you know, bus people here, considering that we just had Andrea pass through. You still getting rain over there, by the way? I didn't ask.
No.
No.
It has settled down. The winds have kind of, we're kind of in that lull before the next band comes through. But
that's where we are.
Apparently, Key West is getting kicked right now. So we hope they turn out okay. But it was a pretty good storm this afternoon, this morning.
This morning it went through. It was a lot of wet, and we're still saying, like you said, more wet supposed to be coming. Although I don't think it's going to move this way. I think the way the bands are going is going to sweep around the state, and we're going to avoid some more. They said probably some rain issues tomorrow, but not as bad as they're getting down south. Fort Myers and Key West and all that, or Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda, those are getting hit pretty hard down there. Sarasota even,
It was bad earlier today, and we're just glad to be through it. There were tornado touchdowns, I guess, some damage, but where was that restaurant? On St. Petersburg, I guess, St. Pete Beach in that area. Yeah, somewhere around there. Haven't heard any loss of life, which is always a good thing. You can replace the trees. Well, sometimes you can replace buildings and all that, but... Nobody was hurt, as far as we know.
That's a good thing. Yeah. Yep. So Mike and I were talking before we came on the air that I am a new proud owner of my first smartphone. Yay! Yeah,
hold
it
on.
Took me forever to get one. Now I need to figure out how to use the bloody thing. So thank you, bus people.
They're like, finally.
Finally. But now I'm going to fill it full of... fill it full of winery apps now. Yeah.
Yes. he is going to be on that smartphone, I bet you anything. Once you get into it, you're going to be... But anyway, this is all about wine.
This is all about wine. But I said I'll fill it full of winery apps. So
there you go. So that was good.
That's the segue there.
There's a lot out there, and next time someone comes on and tells you about a new app or something, you'll go, oh, let me check that out real quick.
Oh, let me do that.
Or we'll have a segment, Ron's favorite wine app of the
– Yes, the, there we can – yeah, we'll look at that in the future here.
There you go. Well, that'd be awesome. be your own guest.
That's right. And the people want to listen to that.
Absolutely. Let's see. If you want to get on the program, we do have a special guest tonight from the Collier Wine Group. I'll be getting him in a couple of minutes ago. Give us a call right now. Get on the phones and dial 646 727-3235. Call us now, get on hold, and as soon as we bring the guest on, or even before, you can talk with Ron, who's on now, of course, our host, and you can talk with Doug from Collier Wine Group as soon as we get him on the phone, and I will bug out and get him right now. So call in, and we'll be waiting for you. Until then, here's Ron.
Yeah, gee, thanks. Yeah, oh, that might go. Try to get hold of Doug there. I've corresponded with Doug a couple, three times in emails back and forth over the last couple of weeks, actually. Last week, Jonathan Ball, JB, was on with us from Eagle Springs Winery up there in Sevierville, Tennessee. And he told us that Doug Seitz is the winemaker for five wineries now. And he does a little bit different on each one of them. He does a different approach, different type on each one. And so actually Doug got a hold of me first, and I have got a hold of him and pinned him down, and he's going to come on and join us tonight and tell us about the wine he makes and tell us what grapes he uses and tell us all that if Mike doesn't have a problem getting a hold of him, which, it, you know, I'm looking at our board here, and he's having some problems. It looks like he just keeps dropping on us, but you'll get through to him, and we'll get him on the program. And if we don't, then there's a couple of things that I got sitting here that I can talk about until we do get him on the show. Wait a minute, Mike is having an issue here trying to get him for some reason. Let's see. Yes. For some reason, Mike's not getting him. It's going to voicemail. And Doug's supposed to be getting on with us. I talked to him the other day. Doug has had some Army buddies coming in that he's going to be spending some time with. And he's a 20-year Army buddies. And so which is cool, because it's always cool to have old Army buddies keep in touch with and get together and all that. For some reason, Mike is not getting through to him. Well, let me tell you a little bit about our guest next week, then. While he's doing this, let me go down here and see if I can't find this. There we go. And then do this, and then do this, and then... Wow, there's a... For some reason, he's just going straight to voicemail. He's not picking. Well, let's see. And they got some. Well, there we go. We'll see if that helps any, see if that does anything there. But next week, we have ourselves a guest coming on that is, actually, I met him at the winery. He came in and tasted wines, he and his wife, and we had a nice conversation talked for quite some time. And he was an investor in a winery in Georgia, Chestnut Mountain Winery. He was an investor and helped start it, and he contributed to it and was, you know, somewhat involved with it in Georgia back in the 80s. They shut down the operation around 2000 after the lower vineyard that they had was wiped out by Pierce disease. So They've had problems with it. And we've talked about Pierce disease before, I'm sure. We'll cover that even more detail next week. When he was at the winery visiting me, he was talking about a lot of the trials and tribulations that he was going through, and what it was like being across the street from a very large winery, and all sorts of stuff. So he is going to be our guest next week, and we will see what he has to say, and have him tell us his stories and his tales and all the stuff that he went through in that. So that should be an interesting program. It should be a lot of fun. It's a good show. And just a good time on that. He was a very good conversationalist when he was in the winery. We had a great time talking and a lot of fun. So looking forward to having him on next week. Trying to get hold of Doug Seitz now, the winemaker at Collier Wine Group. And for some reason, it's his cell phone, and for some reason, it keeps popping into voicemail. Mike's having a heck of a time trying to get a hold of him. I don't know. I've talked to him on that cell number three times over the last couple of weeks. Well, actually, I've left messages for him, and he's left messages back for me. And we finally talked about 2 or 3 days ago. So I know he's coming on, but, you know, bear with us. We'll get him on. If we don't, like I say, other things to talk about. While we've got other things to talk about, I've got something to talk about right now, right here. Real estate. We've talked about real estate before on, and only got a couple of new ones here, a couple of new ones that we haven't talked about before. But Foothill Winery, this is 40 acres, 15-acre vineyard, positive cash flow, it says. Tasting room, equipment, and inventory not included in the price. And they don't give a price. But it does include a 3-bedroom house in a peaceful setting. And the sad thing is, it doesn't really even say where that is. It just says a Foothill Winery. And as we all know, there are foothills all over the country, except here in Florida. So I don't know if you're interested in giving me a call. I'll get you in touch with the people who are offering that. Here's another one, even more exciting. Fabulous event venue. Overlooking Sonoma Valley. Permit for promotional use available per Sonoma company, our county planning. Wonderful home in the hills above Sonoma Valley on 43 acres. 7 acres of formal gardens. 1 acre of Cabernet Vineyard with additional 10 to 15 plantable acres. Spectacular views of Mount St. Helena, the geysers, and surrounding vineyards. Caretaker's home, barn with at tiller, and wine room. Infinity pool, oh, those are always cool, and vast, elegant, covered areas for outdoor entertaining. 4-bedroom, 2.5 bath home. Price $3,495,000. Cheap at twice the price. So, there's a couple of them there, a couple of new ones there. And if you have any questions, if you want to get in touch with them, you want to get a hold of them, or talk to them, give me a call or drop me an email or whatever it takes. Get in touch. I will get you connected with the right people. And then you can become a guest on the show. Let me pop Mike another quick thing here. And for some reason, Doug is not answering his phone. And so what we'll do is we'll wait a little bit here and then see if we can't go back and get him connected. And in, you know, 5 minutes or so, we'll try every 5 minutes and maybe we can get him onto the program. And In a little bit, but not right now. So, no luck, huh?
No. I tried four times, left voicemail, and nope, not yet. We'll try again.
Actually, seven times. That's what's shown on my...
Oh, is it? Yeah, yeah. It has been.
Yeah.
I lost track.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how to wipe these out because it's covering up part of my board here. Covering up part of my switchboard. I just did a quick real estate session there while you were trying to get a hold of Doug. But it was just one of them didn't even tell where the place is. It's talking about 40 acres, 15, but it doesn't say where, you know. And the other one's Sonoma Valley with 43 acres and an infinity pool, which is always really cool. Four bedroom, 2.5 bath home, only $3,495,000.
Ouch. How much was the one that you don't know where it was?
It doesn't even give a price.
No price. It's probably small.
No price. It doesn't say really where it is. What it says here, since you weren't here, everyone, you're going to hear this again because Mike missed it. It says 40 acres, 15-acre vineyard, cash flow positive, tasting room, equipment, and inventory not included in the price. Three-bedroom house, peaceful setting. And that's all it says. No price, no anything.
I know exactly where that is. That's the Everglades. It's on a little dirt road.
Little dirt road.
It's in the swamp. Yeah,
a few hundred yards.
Yeah,
take
way
that
off.
Lap. Hang on, the first lap. Yeah,
you see that tree? Yeah,
the only tree.
that's strange. They didn't list a location or a price.
No, nothing at all. But I'm going to have to email that the email address here and ask more information about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Yeah, just in case somebody wants to know. Well, since we can't get a hold of Doug, I always have a contingent plan, always have a backup here. And I've got a couple of things to talk about. Number one, we talked about, what was it, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think it was, about nutritional labels on wine.
Mm-hmm.
On alcoholic beverages. This was in the... paper here on June the 2nd. Actually, I get the Tampa Tribune. And this was in the paper on June the 2nd. Associated Press article. And I'll read this to you. Probably be the best way to do it instead of trying to paraphrase it. But the headline says, "Are nutritional labels coming on alcoholic drinks?" And the subtitle, "The answer is yes, but only if the producers want to put them there." Which, you know, I mean, great, wonderful. It's not making it do it yet. Washington. Alcoholic beverages soon could have nutritional labels like those on food packaging, but only if the producers want to put them there. The Treasury Department, which regulates alcohol, said this past week that beer, wine, and spirit companies can use labels that include serving size, servings per container, calories, carbohydrates, protein, and fat per serving. Such package labels have never before been approved. The labels are voluntary, so it will be up to the beverage companies to decide whether to use them. Now, this isn't on the paper, but I have to make my comments here because I can't let this go. That's ridiculous. I mean, you know, if you're drinking... if you pick up yourself a bottle of vodka or you pick yourself up a beer can or something like that, then you know it's going to contain some calories. And, I mean, and there's not going to be a whole lot of other nutritious stuff in it and all that because it is alcohol. And to put these nutritional things on there, you might want to put that it contains a half a carb or something. And people are counting the carbs, but a half a carb is not going to make a difference. I'm really curious. I think the first time we see a nutritional label on a drink, whatever it is, whatever the alcoholic beverage is, we need to get a hold of that company and see if we can't get them on the air and ask them why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible that they're – I mean, I don't think the hardcore, you know, lovers of whatever brand or whatever they're drinking, I don't think it's going to matter, you know, because I understand, like, in general foods and everything, you may pick one product over another because it has less calories, it has less carbs, it has, you know, more fiber, whatever the case may be. You may use that as a decision, but I think in alcoholic beverages, one, it probably doesn't matter, and two – you know, I'm not going to pick one over the other. If I already like a particular brand or a particular taste, it's not going to sway me one way or the other. I mean, unless I'm really watching things, then, you know, I don't see any purpose to it. But
If it's a big amount, then maybe you might say, oh, well, what about? But you know, like wine. I mean, red wines, all the calorie levels for 5-ounce serving is just about the same, right around 100 and between 130 and 150 calories for 5 ounces. Oh, excuse me, I got a call. I got a catch in my throat there. Sorry.
That's okay. We didn't hear it.
I held my hand over the mic. Yeah.
That didn't work.
You know, okay. So, well, I find that okay. No good. I need to have a mute button on this. Somehow.
There is a mute button. If you're calling through Skype, hit the mute button on Skype.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Well,
okay. Wow.
What is
that? It's a little microphone, if you have it. You might have found it. Okay.
Oh, well.
You disappeared all of a sudden.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah,
I know. You just got a smartphone, and it's going to take a while.
I know. I just, yeah. But back to this nutritional labeling, though.
Yeah,
and most red wines are between 130 and 150 calories per glass, a 5-ounce glass. Most white wines tend to run a little bit lower than that, and you know, the carbs and the protein and all that stuff is just about the same for it. And so to put that on there, again, I don't see how it's going to serve any purpose. I don't see and same thing, you're absolutely right when it comes to the spirits. I mean, if I'm a rum drinker, I'm not going to care what it says on the label. I'm still going to drink that rum. And if I'm not a rum drinker, then looking at the labels and the nutritional label is not going to make me switch.
No.
I don't know. But, all right, enough editorializing. Let me continue with the article. The decision is a temporary first step while the Alcohol and Tobacco Trade and Tax Bureau, or TTB, and we talked about TTB on previous programs, continues to consider final rules on alcohol labels. Rules proposed in 2007 would have made labels mandatory, but the agency never made the rules final. Wow, 2007 this first started to kick around. The labeling regulation comes after a decade of lobbying by hard liquor companies and consumer groups with clearly different goals. The liquor companies want to advertise low calories and low carbohydrates. Consumer groups want alcohol drinks to have the same transparency as packaged foods. All right. Now, time to editorialize a little bit again here now. The wines I have, all my wines say light. And people come in and say, oh, what does that mean? No calories? I said, no. I said, you have to understand when a light wine is not the low calories of a light wine as opposed to a heavy wine is the mouthfeel, is how the weight of the wine in the mouth. A light wine doesn't mean that it's, you know, it only has 20 calories as opposed to 100. It means that it's just a lighter feel in the mouth as opposed to a heavier wine with a heavier feel. And the light connotation has came to mean just that, low calories. And so when you talk about a heavy wine or a light wine, then we're running across different definitions here for the word light.
Yeah.
And, you know, so if they make these rules, my question, my point here is, if they make these rules so that you have to label this stuff on here. Does that mean I'm going to have to change the word light, like a light red wine that I have or something, because that could indicate that possibly it is low calories when in reality it isn't. It is just a lighter mouthfeel.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean,
they want the chemical light versus, you know, the taste light, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that the same as they refer to like a full body or a, you know, like a full body drink or something? Is that similar to what you're – okay. Yeah,
that's, you know, a full body drink, a heavy drink is – a full body is the mm-hmm. fill in the mouth. I describe it – when I describe it to people, I describe it as think milk. Whole milk, how that feels, and skim milk, how that tastes in the mouth. The weight, technically it's the weight of the wine in the mouth. But if you start requiring labels on there, then, and I'm not the only one. I've seen other ones that, you know, will have the word light on there referring to the fact that it's a lighter wine, that it's not one of these real heavy, powerful wines. And so, are we going to have to change all of our labels, or are we going to be grandfathered in? And if we are grandfathered in, isn't that going to be rather confusing for everyone who buys them? I don't know. It just it tends to create and open up a can of worms. But
yep.
A quote
they're
here.
Sorry,
go on.
Well, I was just thinking they're looking more of a technical version of what light means. And then where's it going to go from there? Well, what about dry and sweet? Are they going to have a scale that you have to say, well, it's 20% dry, or it's, you know, they're not going to – they're finding something else, I guess. But once this light thing, if it gets through, they're looking for a technical value to that versus the taste or the, you know, that – and it could taste – I don't know if it's – is that more subjective or – The way you put it, like if you put light wine, if it tastes light to you or if that's what is characterized, maybe it doesn't taste that way to somebody else. Isn't it more opinion?
You're right.
To
a point, you're right on that, and it will vary on that a little bit. Same thing with sweetness, though. If you put a level – Canada now, and with my apologies to our friends to the north, but Canada has a numbering system on their wines. They go from, I think they start at 1 or 0, I'm not sure, I think it's 1. They go from 1 to 5, with 1 being the driest and 5 being the, or 1 being the sweetest and 5 being the driest.
Wow, okay.
Okay, or it might be the other way around. Is it? What is it? I'll ask my engineer here. Oh, my engineer doesn't know. And you can look at a bottle of wine and you can say, oh, I like this one, that it's a 4, it's going to be sweet. And I think the higher number, the sweeter it is, the lower number, the drier it is. I'm pretty sure that's the way it is. And so, in theory, this is a great, great idea. Okay, this really works. But in practice, there is no national standards that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, any winery can put any number they want on any bottle. Now, of course, people are going to pick this wine up, and they're going to taste it, and they go, wow, this is really, really sweet, and they only gave it a 1. You know, and the word's going to get out. But in reality, they can put any number on any bottle.
Mm-hmm.
If they have a standard, like saying the residual sugar, and use residual sugar that the wineries know what they are, the residual sugar on this is from, you know, minus anything up to 0. It has to be a 1. And if it's a 0 to 1.5 residual sugar, then it has to be a 2. And if it's from 1.5 to 2.5, it has to be a 3. And use that time. That's great, because then you know if you pick up a 4, then the residual sugar is going to be, say, 4. And you are around 4, and you know it's going to be very sweet, or even a 5 is going to be higher than that. But without a standard, and this is something else on these things, too. If they're going to do that, they really need to start looking at a standard on these, a way that wineries and spirits and everybody, I don't know. It's just I'm thinking of all sorts of possibilities here that they can make this easier and better. But yet, I you know, it's just, well, So let me go on with this. I'm sure we have more comments about this as we're going further into it, too.
Okay.
A quote here from Guy Smith, who is an executive vice president at Diego, the world's largest distiller and maker of such well-known brands as Johnny Walker, Smirnoff, Jose Cuervo, and Tanqueray. He says, this is actually bringing alcoholic beverages into the modern era. I mean, you know, alcoholic beverages, just because you're putting a label on the side of it doesn't particularly mean, I mean, was it the modern era showing that we can test these things to that point to bring out all this information, so therefore we have to do it? I don't know.
It sounds like it's going to be a lot more work for the winemakers, too, because if you have to put the calories and you would have to put the vitamins.
Calories,
and all
carbohydrates.
Carbohydrate. Protein. Isn't that going to require more chemical analysis of each batch that comes out now? I mean, aren't you going to have to analyze it? Because, I mean, you're not making wine based on, oh, I have to keep it under 160 or whatever the, you know, the calorie, right. Whatever. And then the serving size, you're going to have to do a lot of, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of work for the wineries and other, you know, type of alcoholic beverages to have to check into to get their labels up to, you know, if this is passed, you know, it seems like it's going to be a lot more work.
Well, I think, and one of the things, too, I mean, it applies to beer, too, and we've ignored beer on this, but it applies to beer, too. And beer also does their light thing on there, but and that means less calories. But one of the things I can't help but think, I think it's going to affect wine more than it will spirits or beer, because the formula for spirits and beer is pretty standard. I mean, if you're going to make a batch of vodka, that vodka pretty much is going to be the same every time. If you're going to make a batch of beer, the hops you use and what you make is going to be pretty much the same every time. I mean, if I go out and buy myself a beer and I pour a glass of it and I start drinking it, and I buy that same beer a year from now, it's going to taste the same as that one. And I buy it 3 years from now, it's going to taste the same. I know if I'm going to drink a can of Coors, it's going to taste like Coors that I used to have in California 40 years ago. And the same thing with spirits, rum or vodka. I just mentioned vodka. I'll go into that again. You know, if you get yourself Smirnoff vodka and you have some of that, it's going to taste the same now as it did and as it will. But wine, on the other hand, can vary because of vintage a lot. And, you know, it's going to be, you know, a drier wine. It's going to have more body to it. It's going to have different things. So every year, a winery is going to have to either do new testing and make a new label or send that stuff to a test lab. And there are test labs out there that can break that stuff down for you and spend the money to do that. So every year, a winery is going to have to look at doing that and then changing their label every year to correspond to the proper calories and carbs and protein and fats and all that per serving. I don't know. I don't see the wisdom in that. I really don't see the wisdom in that. How is that going to help people? And it's not going to help them. It's going to cost more money to people. The wineries can't absorb all that cost.
Yeah.
So it's going to have to be passed on. I don't know. Let me go on with this here.
I'll try. I'll try him again. Sorry.
Okay. Okay. I'll go ahead and talk about this next one here. We'll see if we can't get a hold of Doug here one more time. Not all alcohol companies are expected to use labels. Among those that may take a pass are beer companies, which don't want consumers counting calories, and winemakers, which don't want to ruin the sleek look of their bottles. Now, for different reasons of, you know, sleek look of the bottle, would think it would be one of the last things that I would really worry about, simply because of the reasons I just mentioned. I mean, having to change it every year and stuff like that. The Wine Institute, which represents more than 1,000 California wineries, said in a statement that it supports the ruling, but, quote, Experience suggests that such information is not a key factor in consumer purchase decisions about wine. And this is something Mike brought up. And Mike, let me, you left. Again, problems?
Yep.
Same thing.
Voicemail again. So
let me, Mike, you just mentioned this up, but it says here, it said that they don't expect beer companies or wine companies to do this. One of the reasons they said wine companies is because it will ruin the slick look of their bottles. I mean, I think that would be one of the last reasons, you know, to put a little nutritional label on it. But
yeah,
you know, really. The Wine Institute, which represents more than 1,000 California wineries, said in a statement that it supports the ruling. But and I need to call the Wine Institute and ask them again. I mean, they're
didn't we have somebody? We had
yeah,
guest
we had them on the program. Yeah.
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 Okay.
We'll have follow to up. Ask them and ask them why they support this and mention my concerns, my objections. That would be something I'll have to take care of. But
so they support it. Huh.
It says, but experience suggests that such information is not a key factor in consumer purchase decisions about wine. And that's just what you said. You know, if you're buying something, if you find one you like, I mean, if they start putting the calories on there and the others are less calories, you're not going to change your mind.
Yeah, it's not going to matter.
Yeah, it won't matter. This was said by spokeswoman Gladys Hirachi, said the group knows of no wine companies that plan to use the new labels, which I can understand why. The beer industry praised the agency for acknowledging that labels should take into account variations in the concentration of alcohol content in different products. The industry has opposed the idea of defining serving size by fluid ounces of pure alcohol, or as 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of 80 proof liquor. On the grounds that you may get more than 1.5 ounces of liquor in a cocktail, depending on what else is in the drink and the accuracy of the bartender.
Oh my gosh. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know. We're looking at all these possibilities and all these different things here. The last paragraph, the ruling would allow the labels to declare alcohol content as a percentage of alcohol by volume, the approach favored by the beer industry. You know, TTB and I don't know if anybody out there. I mean, after we talked about TTB, I suggest you go look at it, look up wine, and you look up all the stuff there. And there was page after page after page after page. I mean, of rules and regulations and covering just about anything. And of course, they have to cover everything. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not faulting them for having it, but it just okay. Enough is enough. I mean, you don't need to regulate this to the point where it becomes ridiculous. And I think maybe it might be when you start putting nutritional labels on wines and beers and spirits.
The only thing that as a consumer, I think if you started using that as an advertising gimmick, like some of these soft drinks and these other products, oh, my wine has zero carbs versus, you know, down the street or whatever, then I could almost see a point to that, because you want to see that, well, how many carbs do you – oh, you do have zero, yet this other bottle that has that same label has 100 carbs or whatever it is, 50 carbs or whatever. You know, I could see as a marketing ploy, if you're trying to, you know, put a gimmick on your wine or your product that says, you know, we have – half the calories of our competitor, then I guess as a consumer you may want to see that to compare it. But still, it's the flavor, you know, the process, everything that would turn me towards, you know, the particular bottle, not the breakdown of what's, you know, everything that goes into it. I don't need to know that.
That's it exactly. I mean, if you're going to drink wine, if you're going to drink beer, if you're going to drink spirits,
mm-hmm.
You know it's got calories in it. You know it's got that stuff in it, and you know it doesn't really make a big difference to you.
Yep.
And you know that if you're on a diet, in fact, most diets tell you to avoid alcoholic beverages if you're on a diet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, So you do. I mean, yeah. But and you brought up a good point there too. The carbs. When I teach my class, one of the things I talk about in the class is how many calories in a 5 ounce glass of wine. And it varies, like I said earlier, it varies anywhere from, say, 100 to 150, depending on the wines and all sorts of stuff. And, you know, and I have people come in and say, well, how much alcohol is in this? And I said, about 12%, you know, by volume. And I don't know if people understand.
No idea.
What that really means. I mean, you know, and some people came in, they asked that, and I go, is 24 proof? And they go, oh wow, that's a lot. And I said, no, that's only 12%. I said, you know, that's 12% of the volume. And then you can see the lights come on above their head. That, oh, okay, well, you know, and I have people come in and say, well, you know, how much sugar is in this? And I said, well, it's, you know, the residual sugar on this particular one is rather low. It's only like, you know, 1.8 or something. And they go, oh, okay, good. I'm a diabetic. And I'm going, whoa, wait a minute now. Alcohol metabolizes in your system and turns to sugar. So, you know, just worrying about how much residual sugar is in there, if you're diabetic, is not the key to it. I mean, it's the alcohol in there is going to turn to sugar too. So, and all these factors come into play. And to start putting these nutritional labels on there, though, wine doesn't contain carbs. So if you're looking to avoid carbs, drink all the wine you want. But it does contain calories. And, you know, I think it contains 1.5 gram of protein per glass of red wine. And you know, it just, I don't know. I think the whole thing is just a little bit absurd myself. I don't see how it could, I don't know. If anybody out there thinks this is beneficial, I would love to hear from you. I mean, I don't.
Well, apparently the Wine Institute does.
I'm going to have to get a hold of them. I really am. The Wine Institute thinks it's a good thing. I'm going to have to call them and say, hey, you know, you said something here which I really don't understand. Could you explain this to me?
Yeah, maybe they'll come up with a good, you know, thing for it and say, oh, okay, yeah, I can almost see that.
Oh, okay, well, then I'll have to change my mind and we'll promote it. But as it stands right now, I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. I another thing I want to talk about, we haven't talked about this in a while, and it's still out there, it's still floating around. I've asked for suggestions before, and I've gotten a few on them. I've passed the ones on to you that I've gotten. But this is the name designation law that went into effect back in March of 2006, and different ones. This little article here was in Tassel Ridge magazine, I guess, if you want to call it that, that they send out. Simply Extraordinary is their magazine. Tassel Ridge Winery is in Iowa. We've had them on. Oh, wow. What was it? I guess about 6 months ago. Has it been that long?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. We had Tassel Ridge. Good interview. Nice winery. You can go back and listen to the show. Really nice. But beautiful winery. I mean, it's just gorgeous. The nice big open sales room. And they have a big room for meetings and dinners and receptions and all that stuff. Really, really beautiful place there. All overlooks glass walls that overlook the tank rooms and the storage rooms and the facilities and everything. And then they have this beautiful vineyard where they take tours. They have the vineyard bus, the vineyard cart that is like a 15-person golf cart type thing, like you see at the theme parks and stuff, and it takes you out to the vineyard and explains to it. I'm great winery. I mean, I am really, really impressed with Tassel Ridge. But you can sign up for their e-letter and also their newsletter that they send out, their magazine. And it's really a nice little magazine, if you, I keep wanting to say magazine because that's really what it is more than anything. Of course, they're promoting themselves and they're tooting their own horn, and more power to them, because they really do put a lot of money and effort into this little magazine. It's really a nice, nice presentation here. But in the spring 2013 edition of their magazine, and oh, and by the way, it's www.tasselridge.com, not Tassel Ridge Wine, but just Tassel Ridge, TasselRidge, TasselRidge.com. They have this article. It says, you can't use our names. Rules on the use of names on labels are changing. Now, this went into effect a long time ago. We haven't talked about this in quite some time. And he brought up a few more things on this that was rather interesting. My printer's starting to run out of black ink here, too. I noticed that some of these sentences are a little bit harder to read. Well, but people who have enjoyed wine for several years occasionally ask for a Burgundy or a Bordeaux when we ask them what kind of wine they like. They seem to be interested not in wines from Chianti or Bordeaux, but in wines with those labels. It wasn't too many years ago that one could purchase wines called Chablis or Burgundy, which usually came in a gallon jug, Bordeaux, Chianti, or Rhine wine, and get a pleasant, if undistinguished, wine that was easy to consume by itself or with food. The grapes usually came from the Central Valley of California, where they were also made, and the wines usually had one characteristic in common. They were inexpensive. This has all started to change because of a 2006 agreement between the United States and the European Union. And that has also had a lot, and this is me editorializing here a little bit, or informing you, a lot of other countries have joined in since then. But the original agreement, March 14, 2006, when it was signed, originally was United States and European Union, and has expanded substantially since then around the world. Specifically, over winemaking practices and naming regulations. Specifically, the European Union agreed to accept certain American winemaking practices used on wine imported into the European Union, and the U.S. agreed to cease approving European place names on labels. Now, again, we've talked about this in the past, but we haven't talked about it in a while, so I'm bringing it up again. American wineries that were already using these European place names were grandfathered in for a period of 3 years, and no new labels were approved for U.S. wineries using these place names. Now, I didn't know it was 3 years. I've never heard anything or read anything anywhere that it was 3 years. So I don't, you know, and I've looked up and I found the law itself, and the law itself didn't say anything about only 3 years. So that, when I read this, that surprised me, and I went back and I checked again, and again, I couldn't find anything that said 3 years. So I didn't know what he's basing that on. Wineries that have made and sold wine they call Champagne, for example, have protested the naming change vigorously, pointing out that in some cases, they've been calling their wine Champagne for more than 100 years. It is not clear at this point where this change will all end up. However, the law is clear. Americans will not use European place names going forward. And if Europeans have their way, some winemaking terms like this is faded a little bit. Surlis, okay, that's what it says. Terms like Surlis and the Methochampagne, and even winery names that include Chateau, will be off limits to American wineries. And the Europeans are trying to push that Chateau as being illegal, which, you know, you have to say, oh my gosh, if they do that, wineries are going to have to go out there and start changing their names all over the place. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of them use Chateau on the labels and all that. Here are some of the terms that are impacted. Bordeaux. This is the French region that spans the Garonne and the Dordogne rivers near the Atlantic coast of France. It's one of the largest of the French wine-producing regions. All wines that have Bordeaux on the label must be produced in Bordeaux, which is usually not a problem. You don't go out and see a whole lot of Bordeaux's. Burgundy, this is usually the problem. Burgundy, the French region in east central France, is one of the best known wine regions in the world. All wines that have Burgundy on label must be produced in Burgundy. At least one major American wine producer is contesting this decision. And it doesn't say who, but it just says one. Chablis, again, Chablis is the northernmost wine district of the Burgundy region of France. Almost all the vineyards in Chablis produce Chardonnay, and the wines are known for their flinty, mineral-laden qualities. In the U.S., Chablis was frequently made from Chenin Blanc and was generally more fruity, was slightly sweet, and a light white wine. Not light calories, just a light mouthfeel. That was me editorializing again. Henceforth, if it says Chablis, the wine must be made in Chablis from grapes growing in the Chablis region of France. Champagne. This is north of Chablis, actually. Champagne is one of the northernmost of the French wine regions. It produces the fizzy wine of the same name. In accordance with the 2006 US-EU treaty, only wines using champagne on labels before 2006 may continue to use the term, and then only if it is accompanied by the wine's actual origin, example, California or New York. The current term for a fizzy wine made anywhere other than Champagne that has undergone a secondary fermentation to introduce CO2 is sparkling wine. Or if it's in Spain, it's Cava. Or it's in Italy, it's I got a blank now. But you know, in the United States, it's sparkling wine. Chateau. Now this one I didn't know about, and this one I'm curious. Chateau, when used to name the winery. There are no limits to the use of this name on labels in the United States at the present time. But if you use a chateau to name a winery, that's illegal. So there's a lot of chateaus out there. I have a Chateau Soleil Chardonnay. Is that illegal? And it says French winemakers have traditionally used the term to indicate wine that comes from grapes grown on a single property that also includes the winery. It has not meant that there was a grand house or chateau on the premises. There is some movement by Europeans to limit the use of chateau on wine labels to French wineries that grow their own grapes on the winery premises. But I have a Chateau Soleil Chardonnay. Is that affected? I don't know. According to this article...
Does that include I don't know if the labels represent that, but could they be referring to a house or residence? I mean, is it like they're chateau houses?
Yeah. Well, according to this,
residence.
You can't. Chateau, when used to name a winery, is illegal. So there's certain,
Interesting.
Chateau Elan. Isn't that up in Georgia? Isn't there a winery Chateau Elan? I think there is. Do they have to change their name?
Yeah, where's that? Brazelton, Georgia.
Yeah.
Chateau Elan. Chateau, though. See, I'm still thinking the type of the look and the outside of the winery, the building itself may look like a chateau, right? No.
And if it does, call it a
chateau. The house, of Elan, whatever, a manor-style house that belongs to this particular individual or whatever the name references to Elan, that's not necessarily naming the grape or the region that it's – I don't know.
You're right. And according to this, chateau, from what he's saying here, chateau, when used to name a winery, is illegal. European Union, casa, Spanish for house.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Does that mean you can't call a winery a casa? And what about all these wineries down in the Southwest? I mean, in Texas and Mexico and New Mexico and all these. I'm sure there's some casas there. I can probably go back and look up and name a few of them. I'm not going to do it, but if Chateau is illegal, casa would. It seems like those would be more generic terms than they would be copyrighted terms, if you will.
Or trademark or something. I was just thinking about that. You can't trademark Chateau because that can be used in so many different ways. Or I don't understand champagne. I don't see how they can trademark a word like that is used in different, you know, industries besides the wine industry.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't see how you can do that. It's not a brand. It's not a brand. It's not a, you know, I don't know. You can't. Yeah. I mean, I don't see how you can do that.
I don't know. And the Chateau's a building. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Come on.
Chianti is made in a precisely defined portion of central Tuscany. This wine is associated with a distinctive bottle encased in a straw basket. Dry red wines made in California's Central Valley from several different grape varieties used to be sold as a generic Chianti. This practice is now forbidden. Method Champenois is the name of the technique for conducting a secondary fermentation in a bottle with the objective of creating a fizzy wine. The term may now only be used on champagne made in Champagne. So they can no longer say, well, I guess that's, you have to say, I use the traditional French method. You can't say, I use the method Champagne. You have to say, I use the traditional French method. Some of this seems a little bit ridiculous to me.
It is.
You know, I really do. I mean, okay, it's fine to guard your name, but okay, come on now.
Yeah.
Port. Port is a wine in which the fermentation is stopped early by adding grape spirits in a quantity large enough to kill the yeast. Because the fermentation is not complete when the spirits are added, the wine is sweet and relatively high in alcohol. Port is deemed to be a place name. It refers to Portugal, where fortified wine has been made for about 400 years. American wineries that made wines they call port before 2006 are allowed to continue using the name. However, so I can call my port a port. However, new wineries are prohibited from using it. And this is what I brought up before. We need to think of a new name. American wineries have become quite creative in developing alternative names for port. One winery calls it Starboard. We've talked about that. Tassel Ridge calls it a Finale, symbolizing the role of this wine as an accompaniment to dessert as a wine that follows dessert. So Finale, that's a nice time. Surlie is spelled S-U-R-L-I-E. Surlie is a wine-making technique where a white wine is left in contact with the dead yeast cells for an extended period of several months as the dead yeast cells decay, a process called autolysis. They impart a distinctive aroma and flavor to the wine. The French winemaking industry wants to make Surlie aging a process that only French wineries can identify in that way, with those words. That's also BS, if you ask me. I mean, you know, okay, fine. I can understand this. We need to think of new names for certain things. But, the more I'm starting to read things about this, and the more they're starting to say, well, we need this protector and we need that protector, and it's Chateau and things. I don't know. I don't know.
That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't.
I think Finale is also used as well, so you can't actually name your wine Finale because that has to deal with music. And the Italian wine industry is going to sue over that as well because you can't. Yeah. Oh no, you can't touch Finale now. So what was that winery? Let's contact them.
Starboard won't work either because Starboard,
the shipping industry,
is the shipping industry, and
You can't trademark something like that or restrict it.
I don't see how they can. I really don't. But they're trying to do it. The French are trying to do it. And they're trying to push it to the point where it's everything has to be this and everything has to be that. And,
Maybe sales are down and that's the only way you can come back to us is, they can't sell it as champagne then.
That's right. Yeah, and sales is down. The French
that's right.
are in third place in consumption in the world behind the United States and Italy. So, hey, the
that's
French
right.
are a little worried there.
So let's go ahead and start trademarking names.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, no offense to our French listeners. Should we put a disclaimer at the end of this?
We put a disclaimer. No offense to our French listeners, but.
It's just, yeah. Come on, you know.
You know, really. I mean, you know, if you're a French winery, listen to us. Why? You know. And if you are, call me. Explain to me. Explain to me
yeah.
why this is, you know. I'd love to get you on the air and talk about it. I'm not going to, you know. I mean, if you can convince me, I'm open-minded. I'll listen to you.
Yeah. Absolutely. And yeah. we'll get you on Skype if it's a long distance, you know,
yeah.
if you're actually
yeah.
in France. We'll get you on Skype. So yeah, do it that
cost,
way.
Cost you across the ocean. Yeah.
Yep. Just time, whatever time it is over there.
Yeah.
It is kind of late. It's after 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., somewhere under. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. If they're really passionate about it, they'll stay up and talk to us.
Yeah.
Or we can get them on in the morning and put the show on tape and play it. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, that would work.
Very interesting. Okay.
There you go. So now yeah. that's I knew we'd find stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Sorry, we you know it wasn't false advertising. It was just disconnection. We could not get a hold of Doug tonight. I will email him and ask him what happened, and I'm sure he will apologize and email me back, and we'll get him on at a later date. Not next week though, because we have a guest next week, and so maybe the week after that.
Okay, sounds good. Wonderful stuff. And we did have a caller get online on
really?
The on the studio here, and I did drag him into the screening room and shouted out to him a couple of times and didn't get any response. So put him back on hold because, you know, you can call and just sit there on hold and listen to the show that way, or you can press the one button if you have a comment, like I usually do, because there's a little question mark there. But it usually says if you want to, usually when you call in, it'll say if you want to talk to the talk on air or talk to the host or into the show, you press the one key, and that lets us know. It sends a little flag up and says, hey, so this person actually wants to say something. But I didn't see that on this one, and I dragged him into the screening room just to check, just in case, and there was no sound, so I put him back on hold, and now they're no longer there. So, wanted to talk, try it again, or, you know, whatever, but unless you have anything else to go into for this show, we'll go ahead and close it down and tell you about the cool things that are happening this weekend at Florida State's Winery, and that's day after tomorrow. So for this one, at least, let me scroll back up because I was looking at the guests that you're having, the vendors. Here we go. This Saturday, that is June the 8th from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m., it is Wine Fest at Florida State's Winery. It's going to be fantastic. You want to check it out? Hold on just a second.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida State's Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@floon.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
There we go. Yep, come on out. Live entertainment by Patrick Foy, and of course the storms and everything will be cleared out way before then, so we're looking at a great weekend great Saturday. Come on out, and you will definitely enjoy it. You'll love the live entertainment and enjoy a glass of wine and relax and just enjoy the day in general. So there's also going to be wine tastings with Ron, our own show host there, who's also the general manager and vice president of Florida State's Winery. And then you can also shop the vendors there. There's going to be many unique and handmade items and some brand names you have known for years at Florida State's Winery. So come on out and do some shopping. It's going to be great. And you definitely want to want to get in on this Saturday. That's the 8th of June, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. And, yeah, it's going to be very enjoyable. So shopping is always fun there. And they're all gathered outside the giant oak trees in the back. So there's plenty of shade. And you can picnic tables. You can sit, enjoy it, and have a great day there. So check it out. Also, you have a wine class. Check the date on that. Yes, June 23rd. Mark your calendars for that if you're interested. It is a three-hour class, very, very entertaining, and also Ron does that as well. And that is at Florida State's Winery, and all topics regarding wine are covered, history of wines, wine grape varietals, grape diseases, wine glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution and uses, oak aging, wine tasting and rating wines, how they are rated. And there's also a sampling of wines and a discussion about it. And you definitely want to contact the winery at the phone number, which I had earlier, but that was 813-996-2113, and RSVP at that number and let them know. All right. Or do you have any other contact info? Yeah, we have contact stuff. Visit the website, floridastateswines.com, floridastateswines.com, and you'll get more information there about events. And also you can subscribe to the newsletter that comes out every 2 weeks. Very, very cool stuff. There's information on the tip jar, which last month was for autism research, and there were donations for that as well. And this month, the tip jar is for the American Red Cross for help and supplies in Moore, Oklahoma. Been in the news quite a bit lately. So, you just stop by and help them out. The tip jar is located at the front counter, and really appreciate you adding something to that. So also in the newsletter, there's recipes. This one in particular, it's turkey scallopini with capers and lemon recipe. So there's a full thing there. There's also wine facts, some interesting stuff, and it's a great read. So subscribe to the newsletter when you're on their website at floridastateswines.com. All right, cool. Do that, and don't forget the winery is open daily, 11 a.m. until 6 p.m., except major holidays. But I don't see, other than in July, 4th of July, you're closed. But other than that, stop by and say, hey, what's going on? Very cool. So next week, we definitely have a guest. I was checking the Facebook page earlier before I got on there, and I didn't notice anything, but I have to check it again. I know we're still in Tennessee next week, so that'll be good.
Yeah, actually, next week, the person we're talking to had a winery open up a winery in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, he was an investor in it, and he's got a story behind it. He stopped by the winery and talked to me and tasted some wines and all that. Very interesting man. He'll be our guest next week.
Cool. Excellent. All right. We will put that on the page and just stay in touch with our Facebook page or sometimes the Twitter feed, or the website, of course, also has our Facebook information on there as well. You can go to allaboutwinebtr.com, and that has information, plus links to our previous guests are also included. So all kinds of stuff there. Anyway, we will see you on June the 13th at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for another edition of All About Wine. And thanks to everybody for tuning in. Appreciate all the listeners that we have out there, either live or on the archives. You know, if you're not listening to a live one, still, really appreciate it. So hope you enjoy it, and we will see you all next time. If you have any comments or suggestions, you can always email allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That's the email address, and we'll give it again during the little outro here in just a second. So thanks again, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you all very much, now.
All right, cool. Here we go. And dance.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly, and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.